Ready when you get one. And then I just, there's good news. Good evening.
Here are the WGXC headlines for Wednesday, March 22nd. Former President Donald Trump claimed over the weekend that he would be arrested on March 21st. He was not. The number of monarch butterflies wintering in the mountains of central Mexico dropped 22% from the previous year, and the number of trees lost from their favored wintering grounds tripled, according to the Associated Press. Democrat David A. Schneider, with 94 votes, beat longtime Mayor Lee E. McGonigal with 87 votes in the Tannersville mayoral election March 21st. Caro Durham High School principal Jeremy Moore resigned due to personal reasons on February 16th, and the school has named David Proper as interim principal. Charlotte Diffindale, a 1997 Caro Durham High School graduate and now a letter carrier from Albany, New York, competed on Jeopardy March 21st, finishing second. And temperatures will exceed 60 degrees in many areas locally on Wednesday, March 22nd.
Hi, it's Holly Tanner.
And Justin Weaver.
We're from Something to Talk About, and you're listening to 90.7 FM.
WGXC, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show, and we have a busy morning show today. We're going to hear from artist Chimba, who has a show at the Light Forms Art Center in Hudson through April 16th. Randall Martin and Reverend Kim Singletary spoke with her. We're also going to hear about the Pine Hollow Arboretum in Slingerlands in Albany County. And we'll hear the national headlines from the Public News Service, the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate, and all your local news and renewable weather. It all starts after Jason Martin from Troy has finished singing this song on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
Airwaves controlled. A stream runs through. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
Catskill Town Board meets every first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at the Catskill Town Hall and holds a committee meeting the third Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. You can turn out in person at the Catskill Town Hall to speak at these meetings or tune in to a live web stream through the Catskill Town Board and WGXC. Go to wgxc.org/listen or click on the listen button at wgxc.org to tune in to any of the Catskill Town Board meetings, the first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. and the third Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at wgxc.org and townofcatskillny.gov.
Do you have 17 cents a day to support a platform for many diverse voices to have their say on the local airwaves? Just 17 cents a day, a monthly $5 recurring donation, can help keep local youth on the air at WGXC 90.7 FM. Your monthly sustaining support will keep the airwaves full of music from around the world and around the corner. WGXC needs 500 sustaining supporters to make sure there is one spot on the dial where the community can have access to its own airwaves. Make your pledge today at wgxc.org/donate and do your part to protect an important source of local news, information, and entertainment. With just 17 cents a day, you will do your part to protect your favorite frequency. Become a sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxc.org/donate now.
WGXE is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Kyle of Athens, New York. WGXE's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXE as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxe.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXE Daily News for Wednesday, March 22nd. Go to the WGXE newsroom at wgxe.org for more information about any of these stories. We have village election results for most Greene and Columbia County villages, although Hunter, Kinderhook, Philmont, and Valencia have yet to report. In Columbia County, in the village of Chatham, John F. Howell was the winner for mayor with 173 votes, and no one else got any votes. For trustee, Peter Minahan got the most votes with 157. Brandon Gaylord received 55 votes, but that might not be enough for the second place seat on the town board, as there were 127 write-in votes. Village of Kinderhook trustee has not come in yet, nor has the village of Philmont mayor race come in yet. Village of Valencia race still unreported. In Greene County, the village of Athens, incumbent Democrat Amy Sirago received 284 votes and Republican David Leggio got 94 votes. For trustee in Athens, Democrat Allison P. Phoenix with 241 votes and Republican Anthony J. Proper Sr. with 193 votes won the two seats on the board in Athens over Democrat Joshua B. Lipsman with 174 votes and Gordon W. Mosher, a Republican with 129 votes. There were four other write-in votes. In the village of Catskill, incumbent Joseph D. Kozlowski got all 112 votes for trustee. In the village of Coxsackie, for mayor, incumbent Republican Mark R. Evans with 354 votes soundly beat Democrat Veronica L. Foley with 161 votes for mayor. For trustee, Republican Rodney E. Levin with 289 votes and Democrat Donald A. Doust with 277 votes, won the two seats in Coxsackie. Republican Cesar O. Cheverara with 244 votes, and Democrat Christopher J. Cimento with 206 votes finished behind. For Village of Tannersville Mayor, Democrat David A. Schneider with 94 votes beat longtime Mayor Lee E. McGunnickle with 87 votes. For trustee, David P. Cashman with 147 votes and Dylan M. Legg with 145 votes took the two board seats in Tannersville. For village justice, George C. Bain Jr. got all 147 votes except for two write-in votes. Village of Hunter results are yet to be reported. The Daily Freeman reports that Dutchess County Sheriff's deputies started wearing body-worn cameras last week, Sheriff Kirk Imperardi announced on March 17th. And Priority in a press release said, quote, "The cameras have been provided to sworn members of the sheriff's office in order to provide greater transparency, build community trust, and further honor the commitment to our police reform and modernization plan," unquote. Police said the cameras record audio and video when officers respond to incidents or take, quote, "official action, including but not limited to using force and making arrests," unquote. And Priority also said, quote, "The cameras are expected to be of significant overall benefit to both the deputies and the public that they serve as we move forward and get better together," unquote. Read the full story in the Daily Freeman. Noah Zweifel reports in the Altamont Enterprise that several southern Albany County towns have or are considering tax exemptions to attract more first responders. Knox has already granted a 10% tax exemption for first responders, while several other towns are holding public hearings to consider tax breaks for their emergency personnel. Quote, "In the hill towns, ambulance services have shut down in recent years due to flagging numbers, and the remaining one, Helderberg Ambulance, has turned to the State University of New York system to attract student recruits with the promise of a $5,000 scholarship per semester per student," unquote, Zweifel writes. Rensselaerville holds a public hearing on the matter at its town board meeting at 6:45 p.m. on March 23rd at the town hall. The Bern-Knox-Westerloo Board of Education holds a public hearing about this at 7 p.m. on March 27th in the elementary school cafeteria. Westerloo's public hearing is at 6 p.m. April 4th at the town hall, and Bern will have the matter on the agenda for their April 12th meeting at 7 p.m. at the Bern Community and Senior Center. Read more about this story in the Altamont Enterprise. And read more about any of these stories in the WGXE newsroom at wgxc.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Wednesday, March 22nd. Local early morning temperatures range from 29 degrees in Medusa to 37, yes, 37 up in Tannersville. Regional average soil temperature is 38 degrees. We're creeping up. Winds pick up especially this afternoon, but don't get gusty. A high of 62 happens at 4 p.m. If you're up on the mountains or catching this signal up north, you're only going to see 50 degrees today. Overnight, we should see a low of 45 and some rain chances enter the area after midnight. That will pick up as the day begins on Thursday, and that rain falls all day, and we get a high of 58. Overnight, rain mostly stops, and we see a low of 39. Friday, some spots will still see some lingering light rain, but it dries out for everyone in the afternoon, and we get a high of 50 degrees. Saturday, potential snowfall in the morning, if not rain, we get a high of 39. Today's river temperature will be 37 degrees. Today's tide strength is high. Sunset today will be at 6:55 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:52 a.m. Looking way up, we see X-class flare chances have dropped back to 1%, and we still have plasma incoming due to hit on Friday. Solar wind speed is currently 523.8 kilometers per second at 10.4 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently bad till dark, then fair for frequencies below 8 megahertz overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 4, unsettled. The current sunspot number is 70. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
memory.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
We are working on and showing the district what solidarity looks like. Solidarity with students, with parents, and with each other.
Service Employees International Union Local 99 President Conrado Guerrero says a three-day strike among workers for the Los Angeles Unified School District is just the beginning, unless district officials can negotiate contracts in good faith. Teachers joined picket lines with tens of thousands of bus drivers, custodians, and cafeteria workers demanding 30% wage increases, more full-time work, and more staffing for students in the nation's second-largest school system. Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont is urging the Treasury Department to crack down on the ultra-wealthy's use of trusts to avoid paying their fair share in taxes.
If you have $5 billion, do you really need to step on people in order to get another $5 billion? How much money do these people need?
Sanders says transfer taxes like the estate tax and gift tax help fund public infrastructure for all Americans, but the ultra-wealthy are using increasingly complex tax planning to hoard billions of dollars. Former President Donald Trump remained in Florida Tuesday as officials in New York City prepared for possible protests, which could follow his indictment on alleged hush money payments. New York City Mayor Eric Adams says city officials are monitoring comments on social media.
The NYPD is doing their normal role of making sure that there's no inappropriate actions in the city.
Meanwhile, House Speaker Kevin McCarthy attempted to downplay the legal case against Trump, saying it involved personal money.
And I think in your heart of hearts, you know, too, that you think this is just political. And I think that's what the rest of the country thinks. And we're kind of tired of that.
A lawyer for the former president said any indictment would mean all-out war. A federal judge has blocked key provisions of a California law restricting the sale of new handguns in the state. California Attorney General Rob Bonta says the state's Unsafe Handgun Act saves lives.
California has among the strongest gun safety laws in the nation, and we have one of the lowest firearm mortality rates in the nation. That is not dumb luck.
The court ruled the law's requirements are unconstitutional. Voters in Wisconsin began casting ballots Tuesday in the state's Supreme Court election, which will determine majority control. The court is expected to soon take on the state's controversial abortion ban from 1849. Meanwhile, the Oklahoma Supreme Court has overturned a portion of the state's near-total ban on abortion, ruling women have a right to abortion when pregnancy risks their health, not just in a medical emergency. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Remember last fall when Arizona voters approved a citizen ballot initiative requiring disclosure of donors to dark money groups? The granddaddy of dark money groups is now suing to overturn it, Americans for Prosperity. Proposition 211 Voters' Right to Know Act made it to the ballot last November, and 72% of Arizona voters approved it. It requires any person or entity spending $50,000 or more on a statewide campaign or $25,000 on a local campaign to disclose any original donor source over $5,000. The Arizona Mirror reports that groups opposed to the measure filed a state suit in December, claiming it, quote, violates Arizonans' right to speak freely by chilling donors from supporting causes they believe in and wish to support, lest their charitable giving becomes public knowledge. Last week, the granddaddy of dark money, the Koch-backed Americans for Prosperity, filed a lawsuit of its own, this time a federal lawsuit, claiming that Prop 211 violates the First Amendment right to free speech by disclosing contributions made by donors to nonprofits. Dark money entities include 501c3 nonprofits and limited liability corporations, and OpenSecrets.org estimates $295 million was spent by these groups influencing the 2022 midterms that we know of. We have articles and groups taking action at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
On March 21st, Randall Martin and Reverend Kim Singletary spoke with the artist Chimba about their show at the Light Forms Art Center in Hudson. It's up through April 16th. Here is an excerpt of that interview. You can hear the full interview in the WGXC archives.
Randall Martin and
Pastor Kim, your perpetual optimist.
With our next guest, because for those who don't know, at Light Forms, there is a very unique new exhibit show. Three artists are exhibiting there. I don't know as a compilation if this is historic. I think so for the first time. I know it's definitely the first time that at least two black female artists are exhibiting at the show. And we are pleased to – we tried to get all of them, but we are pleased to have Chimba with us. Hey, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
How you doing?
I'm doing great, Randall. How are you?
We are doing well. And, you know, you've been on the show and talked about your art before, and you're very prolific. We've seen you out at the waterfront at various places. But your show, and along with Iffy, and I forget, I don't have her name, the other.
Virginia.
Thank you. It is epic. It is just fantastic what you guys are doing down there and you know, at your show. But before we talk about your show, why don't you introduce yourself and reintroduce yourself to the audience for those who didn't hear our previous segment with you.
Okay, well, my name is Shiara Hughes Umba, and my artist name, what I go as, is Shimba. And I'm a local artist who resides, born and raised, actually, from Hudson, New York. And, so that's me in a small nutshell, introductory-wise.
Now, I didn't know that you, you are interdisciplinary artist. You know, you do paintings, there's like sculptures, there are wood things, like, just you paint furniture. I mean, there was all sorts of very interesting art, and it was all beautiful and creative. Talk a little bit about your creative influences and what, you know, and how that manifests itself in the art that you're showing in this show.
Okay, well, I mean, basically, it's funny that you asked this question because it's the one that stumps me the most. And then I'm like, it's so simple, Shiara. It's God. I am inspired by the greatest artist of all. And I get, it's like, it's a spiritual journey for me. So when I'm painting, I tap into a whole nother reality, and that's my escape. That's where my colors are bold because that's where I can be bold. I can be loud. Mm-hmm. You know, there is no judgment in that realm. You know, so when I'm creating, it's my release. It's my surrender. It's when I'm letting everything that I have in me go, and I'm sharing my soul with anybody. So if I'm painting a mirror, I see that mirror as something else. So I want to totally transform that mirror from what everybody else would see it as. And I want to give them a whole nother experience that when they're purchasing this mirror that's been painted and repurposed, now it's like it's not going on the wall. I might keep it on the floor. I may, you know, put it in a restaurant somewhere. But either way, I am always aiming to top myself. I'm in constant competition with myself. And I, if you give it to me, I'll paint it. That's my slogan. Whatever it is. Clothing, shirt, shoes, book bags, chairs, refrigerators, I'll paint it.
Wow. Well, that's really good to hear. This is Pastor Kim, and it's glad to have you on the show today. I was out of town.
Thank you, Pastor.
I missed your show over there. But Randall was really telling me how spectacular it all was. And so I'm really glad to hear more about it from you as one of the featured artists there. And so let me ask you, how old were you when you started to develop this skill or recognized you had this talent?
Oh, wow. I want to say I really got into the arts. Ninth grade, I got into the arts. And once I got into high school, and art teachers actually started to take me a little serious because I joined art clubs. I did a mural in Hudson High School. And from there, I was like, look, I told my parents, I want to further my career in art. Like, I'm not a regular 9-to-5-er. I'm the creative. So I have to do this. And so from there, from high school, I went on to pursue a career in fashion. Well, my education in fashion, along with a career in fashion, that lasted for a while, and I'm still in that currently. And in 2020, you know, spending that time home, really, it was an awakening for me, and I got back into that love that I had and that I kind of lost in transition to the hustle and bustle of living down in the city in New Jersey. And I got back into painting, which that's where I currently am now. And which, just to sidebar that's why the show is called Unraveling the Journey Times Three. So it's me unraveling my journey through everything that I've pretty much done.
That's a wonderful and powerful story. And I want to just take a moment to be a champion for you know, funding arts and clubs in our schools, and awesome. Along with all the other financial investments that need to be made to make our education system all that it can be, I really want to emphasize and encourage that. I've heard people in the past, and hopefully the people who may have that opinion or this opinion I'm about to state or this view will be encouraged or even persuaded to want to see their tax dollars go into education, you know, to do what they can. I've heard people say, why am I paying school taxes? I don't have any children in school. Very seriously, very seriously. So what you just shared is an answer to that. You know, you were in high school in the ninth grade, and teachers who recognized your abilities and took you seriously inspired you to pursue professionally and as a career. And so I give snaps and claps to the teachers and to our school systems, and they just need more help from government to put more money into education and, you know, more money from the wealthy 1% to share more of the tax burden and not leave it on the middle class and the lower income people. And that's all my politics on that. Let's get back to art.
Well, you know, the connection is that investment that you make, you know, as you've seen it in your life, you know, pay dividends and fruits, you know, the people that are creative, that are able to express themselves in various mediums are great people in the community. I mean, not to say that the other people, non-creatives, are not necessarily great, but creative people tend to look and transformatively at things. You don't see things as what they are. You can see things as what they could be. Mm-hmm. And so that's a formula for beautifying and empowering a neighborhood and empowering the people in the neighborhood. And so, like, when I see in your art, again, there's these bold swaths, and you can see, you know, kind of the energy shift in the paintings. But there's also, when you look at the different mediums, it makes your imagination run. Cause like you said, with the mirror, I've never seen anybody paint a mirror like you did. I didn't even realize it was a mirror. I seen it, that it was reflective. But when I really looked at it, you know, it had totally been transformed by what it was. Do you get a special kind of joy when you sort of repurpose and take something that was one thing and turn it into another thing?
Absolutely. It's like, it's me taking it to that next level. It's like, okay, I'm looking at this mirror and I see myself, which is cool, but I'm like, what else could this be? You know, and once I add, you know, the paint and whatever design comes to me or whatever image comes in my mind that I dropped onto that mirror, now I'm like, it's a world. It's something else. It's a conversation piece, you know, and I'm hoping that it can bring out someone else's emotions, that when they see it, they're not just looking at it as though it's just a mirror. It's not just this. So my purpose in painting furniture or even masks and sculptures is that it's not just this. It's more. There's always more. And my paintings also have meanings. There's a lot of different meanings in there. So I challenge people to look deeper, which is allowing you to look deeper in yourself.
Well, what do you want people to feel when people come through your exhibit, your part? Because it's a three-piece exhibit. So it's you, Iffy, and I'm from Virginia, right?
Yes.
And so your works are kind of interweaved between the segment, in between the different forms, and it's two big rooms and life forms. So when they come and see your section, what do you want people, what do you want them to take away from viewing your art?
Basically, I want them to take away however my art has made them feel. I want them to have a feeling. Mm-hmm. I don't want to speak and give them a certain feeling to have.
Okay.
So that they can go there expecting that feeling. I want them to go and allow the art to have a conversation with it, create a dialogue. Mm-hmm. You know, how does it resonate with them in their life or whatever's going on, or how does the bold colors make them feel? Because I don't water anything down. I actually don't use water, only to clean my brushes. So that's just a tip I put out there because I don't want to water anything down. I'm not watered down.
That was sound artist Zena Parkins and radio artist Jeff Kolar with the song Pulse from their 2020 collaboration called Scale. Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Hello, Hudson Mohawk listeners. This is your occasional reporter, Garrett McCary, and I am at the Pine Hollow Arboretum in Slingerlands with Gabriella Santangelo. Thanks for talking to us, Gabriella.
Thank you, Garrett. I'm excited to be here.
I got fascinated with pawpaws, and then I found out that there's this little place in Slingerlands that had a pawpaw tree or had a grove of pawpaws, and that's how I discovered the place. You also had a connection as well.
Yes, I used to be previously employed with Ninepin Cider Works, and we partnered with the Pine Hollow Arboretum at that time to make a collaborative pawpaw cider. So I got to come harvest them and then process the pawpaws, which we then released to the public, and got to know pawpaws very well. Very, very obnoxious fruit that has many seeds, but has a really great flavor of a banana, mango type flavor. They call it a custard apple is another name for it. And I got to know the Arboretum, which is how I ended up at the Pine Hollow Arboretum.
Which is why we're here. So tell us a little bit about the Arboretum.
Sure. The Pine Hollow Arboretum is a nonprofit in Slingerlands, and we were founded by Dr. John Abuel, who was a local pediatrician in the Capital Region area. And he had just had this really great hobby of planting trees. He loved trees. He had an affinity for land conservation. And so over the years, starting in 1966, when he purchased the house at the Arboretum, he kept picking up different parcels of land to create the 22-acre Arboretum. So he planted over 3,000 different kinds of species of trees throughout his time, and created some ponds, and sort of we have this beautiful haven of wildlife and forests of the world. So there's areas of the Arboretum that are, you know, the Russian Glade or Japanese Hill, but then we also have Magnolia Field or Azalea Field, and he just created this really amazing place.
Was he trained at all as in taking care of trees?
He was all self-trained. He was a doctor, so he definitely was very smart. but he learned about the land, and he really just studied nature. I think he was a naturalist in his own right, and studied how the water moved through the 22 acres to better curate all the different trees that are here. So when you walk through the Arboretum, you'll notice we have some hills and we have some natural valleys, but we also have a few man-made little bumps. And that was sort of to help create a better environment for some of the unique trees to grow, the planted species. But then he also wanted to preserve all the native trees that are here, which is how we got our Pine Hollow name, all the beautiful eastern white pines that are still here. It creates just a really different type of arboretum compared to many others.
So when did it become a nonprofit sanctuary?
We were incorporated in 2007, and then in 2012 we were chartered by the Department of Education because we do offer some educational programs to different ages. And then in 2018, when unfortunately Dr. Abuel passed, we also received a conservation easement through the town of Bethlehem, which keeps our 22 acres green space in perpetuity. So it will never be developed. It will always be a natural space, whether or not we can maintain the arboretum or not. And then when I began in 2020, I hate to ever bring it up, but the pandemic hit, which a lot of people found the Arboretum because of that, looking for different net walking trails. And, it was very busy for us, which was wonderful. And so from there, we've sort of been building ourselves up.
What does it take to keep an Arboretum going?
Yikes. we're a private nonprofit, so we rely heavily on memberships and donations and all that. And we are a small one as well. So the staff of two people, myself and our horticulturalist, we rely a lot on volunteers. And we rely on a lot of collaborations with local businesses and organizations. We, especially one thing that I didn't think a lot about, which is sort of silly for having this position, is tree work. I mean, it is so constant, especially because a lot of our trees are reaching the end of their life cycle, especially the white pines. So they are coming down with the slightest wind gust. And we are trying to make some different management plans about, you know, what species stay and what species go. Do we protect, you know, the big, beautiful dawn redwood that Dr. Abuel planted, or do we protect the white pine next to it? So native versus non-native sort of decisions.
Yeah, that, the native versus non-native, of course, everybody's going towards native plants and all of that. And but yet it's so pleasant to see these trees from other continents. What is your plan for that?
I think we're going to keep trying to maintain the unique collection that he planted. And we are very conscious of whether or not any of the species that he planted have become invasive. For example, there's an Amur cork tree, which is actually invasive. And we had one planted at the Arboretum that we're looking to take down because it is invasive and we shouldn't have it up. And that's happened a few instances where something was planted that has become invasive, and we manage it and try to educate the public to, you know, not purchase those things in a nursery if you see it. That's really an important aspect of it.
I noticed that you on your website that you have a lot of educational programs going as well and some research as well. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, well, one of my pandemic hobbies was chestnut trees, and I became a total chestnut tree nerd and got really into our chestnut grove. So we were able to partner with SUNY ESF and the American Chestnut Society, and we had them come out and look at our chestnut grove to see if they are true American chestnuts or not. We know that they are not because we found some invoices of when Dr. Abuel planted them. But it was still fun to have them come out and sort of decipher whether or not it was real. But and we had this guy come with his binoculars and his hat. He was an American chestnut detective. And he found on the corner of our property, way, way, way in the back, what he thinks to be a true American chestnut. And I will not disclose its location, but but we are very excited about it. And then we've had other graduate students come research primarily with chestnuts. You know, it's an Asian gall wasp, which is invasive. So we have a lot of chestnuts at the Arboretum, and they are fun to see and study because that is a unique tree.
So tell me about the educational programs that you have here.
We are trying to develop our educational programs and offer a lot more than what we currently offer. So right now we, you know, offer a lot of adult classes, lectures and guided walks and things of that nature. And then we do host the occasional school group or nonprofit over the summer for summer camp field trips. But we are in the process of working with Albany City School District to sort of develop a field trip program for all the different kids. And so we can use all the help we can get because we want to offer more. We just are learning how to.
I'm speaking with Gabriella Santangelo from the Pine Hollow Arboretum in Slingerlands. You'll have to look it up to find it. Tell me about the event that's coming up.
Sure. We have our annual gathering event happening on March 30th at Pat's Barn in Troy. This is our biggest fundraiser of the year. We have some live music by an artist named Juniper, which is very perfect. It's a great time. We've got local food, local drinks by Ninepin Cider. The funds that we raised for this event really help the Arboretum in so many ways. It helps us with all that necessary tree work to keep the Arboretum safe, and it helps maintain our trails and this unique collection so people can come for free all year long and learn about the different forests of the world.
So how does one find out about the event?
Sure. Head to our website, www.pinehollowarboretum.org, or check us out on social media. We post a lot of pictures, and you'll find all the event information there.
That's great. Thank you.
Thank you.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Next, we have 2020 new music from Matmos. The song is called Boom Chicka, and the album is called The Consuming Flame, Open Exercises in Group Form, from Baltimore's Matmos on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, Radio for Open Ears.